Welcome back to another episode of Wicked Darkness with Super Paranormal. I'm Kathy, and with me is Brian.
Good evening.
Debbie.
Hello.
Leah.
Hi.
Leah's having problems tonight. It's okay. Steve.
Hello.
Steve, you're new with us. Welcome.
Yay. Thank you.
Yay.
And we have Scott with us tonight.
Howdy.
Scott doesn't get to come on here very often. So again, welcome, Steve.
Thank you.
To your first episode with us.
Thank you.
And he was able to have a team meeting with us last night, and it was a pretty interesting meeting how we started. We had tried something new last night where we were doing, what would you call it, Leah? Fun and odd. What was it?
Fun and odd foods.
So we were trying different things during our meeting, and we were trying to find things that were just fun and odd to try. And so we had peppermint. Help me out, Debbie. Peppermint.
Peppermint, CBD, whatever, sparkling water. It tasted more like seltzer.
Yeah. And then, Leah, you brought what? You brought
Flaming Mustard Doritos and chocolate chip cookie dough Twix.
And then.
And the strawberry Dr. Pepper crap.
Yeah, strawberry and cream Dr. Pepper. And so we were doing shots of these. So no alcohol was involved, just shots of soda and seltzer water or sparkling water. And then we also were trying Japanese candy that tasted like soda. I guess there was supposed
one
to.
Of them was supposed to taste like soda.
It tasted like the Coca-Cola gummies.
Yes, yes. And then the other one was like a blue soda.
It tasted like taffy.
Yeah. We couldn't understand what we were eating, but it was fun. It was interesting. So brought a new twist to our meeting there. So guys, this week we're going to be talking about Lizzie Borden. Scott's excited about Lizzie Borden. So Lizzie Borden,
there's a crush going on.
There is a crush going on.
I got to watch out because, you know, I might be taken out by a hatchet.
Only if you can prove it.
Well, that's the thing. That's what we're going to talk about.
There you go. Yeah.
Did Lizzie actually kill her father and stepmother?
No.
And get away with it? Or did she not kill him at all and was, you know, accused of killing them? We'll find out. So, Debbie, you want to tell us a little history about Lizzie and her family?
Sure. This is like as a side note, because they didn't really talk about their original mother, their biological mother. She died when the kids were young, at age 39. From a spinal disease, and based on the symptoms, probably appendicitis. So she left the girls when she was young and when they were very young. Lizzie had an older sister, Emma, that lived with her father and the stepmother, whose name was Abby, and they had a live-in maid named Bridget. Apparently daddy got married rather quickly after mommy died. And the girls were not really happy about that. Apparently Mr. Borden had, quite a busy work life. He worked in manufacturing and selling of furniture and caskets. He was also a property developer, director of textile mills, and president of a bank. So they were pretty wealthy, given the combination of all those jobs that he held. One thing that was a sore spot with the girls was that their property, daddy gave some of the properties that he had to his second wife's family. So they were real happy with that. And they never called the stepmother Abby. She was always referred to as Mrs. Borden. And apparently Abby had issues with her father, obviously. One of the stories about why the two of them had issues was that Abby liked, or Lizzie liked, pigeons and built a home for them in the family barn. But Daddy ended up killing them all because they were attracting the neighborhood children. So I guess that's one reason to take a hatchet after your father. let's see, what else? Lizzie was a Sunday school teacher, and from what everyone gathered, was a very quiet, modest, and well-bred woman. She was religious. Like I said, she taught Sunday school, and just some of the things that she was into, it doesn't sound like she would really be a mass murderer. Yeah, I guess for the most part, just I think losing their biological mother at such a young age, I think they were like 3 and 5 or 4 and 5 when she passed away. And then suddenly getting this woman who they didn't know come in and start trying to be their mother didn't really set too well with them. So, I don't know. I guess they just had a real bad upbringing. Dad wasn't around all that much. And when he was, he seemed to put his second wife on a little higher pedestal than the mother, the biological mother. So just reading the stuff that I did about her, and I guess I'm really torn as to whether this was really even like a real crime story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it fact or fiction? I mean, if you're gonna, I mean, you would have to be a really deranged person to do 40 and 41 whacks killing your parents. I mean, that just, even the most insane criminals, I don't think would take it to quite that extreme.
Mm-hmm.
So, fact or fiction, I don't know.
Well, and she wasn't home alone either. They had a maid, a living maid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The maid was upstairs, wasn't she? And she was sleeping. Because she wasn't
feeling good. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I also think that when you talk about her relationship with her father, he was very frugal, very cheap. And, you know, she wanted to dress nice and go to parties and stuff
like that. She wanted to be a member of Boston society.
Right. You know, and then it was called the Hill. That's where all the upper class people lived, and he wouldn't move up there. And I think she resented them a lot for that as well, for not being able to live up to the standards that they could.
Mm-hmm. Well, and she was also known as kind of like a little klepto in town. But she would steal things, but she thought she was getting away with it. And everybody knew that she would go into like the general store and steal something, and they like, yeah, we know she takes things. We just put it on her dad's tab and he pays for it later.
Well, funny that you say that, because later on after the trial, she was accused. There was a newspaper article, I think in the Boston paper, she was accused of shoplifting, never charged, but just because of who she was, they made a kind of a big deal about it.
Yeah. Well, and like you said, her father was very frugal, and the girls wanted to live a better life. I mean, the day that they were killed, that morning, he was asking the maid to recook the same meal that they've had for like 5 days. And this is back in the 1800s, late 1800s, like 1890s. So refrigeration wasn't all that great. And so you're going to recook something. It was like, I want to say it was like mutton or something like
that. It was. That's what it was. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. And so you're recooking something over and over and over for 5 days and not having it really refrigerated. And so they're not feeling well because they're eating
Bad food.
Bad food. Yeah. They're getting food poisoning.
Botulism.
Right. And for what reason? Because dad doesn't want to spend money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I believe the stepmom was hoping that she would get the money, not the girls. That when he would pass it, you know, she would get the money. And that wasn't really the case because they both died the same day. So she didn't get anything. Not that I would say she was like the evil stepmom, but, you know, they weren't her girls. And Lizzie really did seem like Lizzie didn't really have a lot of respect for her stepmom anyway. And she was like daddy's girl. But it seemed like it was a weird relationship between her and her dad.
But that is subject for debate, though, because it says towards the end when they were interviewing all the neighbors and everybody, they mm-hmm. said they never heard them fight. They never heard them argue. They were supposedly they had a good relationship, according mm-hmm. to all the people they interviewed for the trial. So that's, you know, that's another one that's kind of iffy there, too.
Right. Right.
So.
There's allegations out there that Andrew, her father, had some kind of relations with at least Lizzie. I don't know about her sister, but the allegations were that, you know, there was some sexual abuse going on. But again, who knows? I don't know if that's an actual thing or if it's fictional.
And not a lot of the stuff that I read or watched, not everybody mentions that either.
Right. I didn't know that. I didn't find anything about it.
Well, I saw a couple instances that was brought up, but not a lot of time. That seems to be kind of debatable.
Yeah. Well, and it seems like there's a ring, apparently, that Lizzie gave her father. That he wore all the time. That's why it seemed like she was his favorite, but not favorite. I don't know if he really had a favorite, but.
You know, and reading all this too, you don't really hear much at all about the sister.
No. She seemed like she was trying to have her own life, but she still had to stay home with the family.
I think she went out of town when the murders, she was out of town when the murders took place too.
Yeah, supposedly 15 miles away at a friend's house.
Yeah, who was sick
at
that time and trying to take care of that person.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't know, there was also the rumor that her father wouldn't let Lizzie date anybody. Like, she wanted, there were some suitors, but they were never good enough. And so it was like he was trying to make her into a spinster from early on.
Well, I read that speculation was that Lizzie and Bridget were having a little tete-a-tete.
Mm-hmm. There was that allegation too, that there was some kind of relationship between the two of them, because the girls were the only one that called her Maggie. I want to say it was her name
Maggie,
but her real name was Bridget. I don't know why they would call her Maggie, but that was the name that they came up with. And then the day that it happened, like I said, it was Lizzie, and which they at home, they had a different name for her. They called her Elizabeth. And so it was Elizabeth and Maggie and Abby, the mom, the stepmom, that were all home. So, and then the other thing was
her uncle.
You want to talk about the uncle? Oh, okay. Scott's being very quiet tonight.
Right, so, where is Scott? Scott, you're still there?
He's here.
Where are you, uncle? Leah?
Well, I turned the camera off because my internet's being so wonky that I didn't want to have my voice be weird. So can you guys hear me okay?
Yep.
I can hear you.
Okay.
So the uncle was supposedly there too, the day of the murder, and he supposedly got into an argument with Andrew, and he normally slept in I think it was the third,
third floor.
Third floor. But that night he slept on the second floor, which is odd. Normally he doesn't sleep there. But he had an argument with Andrew because of money. And Andrew was like, no, I'm not giving you any money. And I think this was actually his brother-in-law. And he is like, no, I'm not giving you any money whatsoever. And, you know, it blew up from there.
Yeah, he was the brother to his first wife.
Yeah. But Andrew left. And he went to work. I think it was to work. And then he came home later on. But he always had the rule that the house had to be locked up. And so Lizzie locked up the door because Abby had sent Maggie outside to wash the windows. Really hot day. Maggie doesn't feel well because she had to have the mutton for the fifth day in a row. She's, you know, wants to basically throw up right now. And Abby is like, nope, these windows are dirty and they need to be cleaned and you need to get your butt out there and clean all these windows. And the house has a ton of windows. It's three stories, you know, and so she's outside and Lizzie says to Maggie, hey, are you going to be coming in anytime soon? And she's like, no. So if you want to lock the door, go ahead and lock the door. I'm going to be out here for a while. And so Lizzie did. But it's not uncommon for them to lock the door because Mr. Borden wants the doors locked at all times. But then Maggie ended up talking to the neighbor and they're chit-chatting for a while. And so she lost track of time and she lost track of Lizzie and what Lizzie was doing. So there wasn't anybody in the house at that time except for Abby and Lizzie. And that's where the mystery begins of who killed Abby and who killed Andrew. We know that they were killed with an axe or a hatchet, but who did it? Who was holding the handle?
They said it could have been just about anybody.
Right.
Wasn't Lizzie.
Well, and they had family that lived right next door. That was her aunt, cousin.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember what her relationship, but it's definitely a relationship. I want to say aunt, but I'm not positive. Who lived right next door. And she, you know, their houses are very close. When you look at these things back then, they seem far away, but the houses actually are really close together in this little town. So there's family around, people are around, but nobody heard anything. Again, kind of like when we were talking about Amityville, you're not really going to hear an axe obviously hitting somebody, but when there's somebody in the house, you're going to hear that thud. Yeah. Or, you know, she had to make some kind of noise, I would assume.
You know, I also read somewhere that the father wasn't really well liked amongst the people he did business with. He had a lot of enemies outside of the family just because he was a pretty down and dirty businessman. So, you know, that was also part of it. It could have been anybody of these business people that he had screwed over the years.
So that day we're talking about, you know, it, like I said, it was a hot day, August 4th, 1892. It was a Thursday. Abby's body was found upstairs in the bedroom. The bedroom that she was in was the actual bedroom that John, the uncle, stayed in. So she was making the bed or cleaning the room or something like that because he is now gone. He's not staying there anymore because basically he pretty much got kicked out because now he's asking for money and stuff. So the forensics was not very good back then. So they found, it sounds like they found Abby after they found Andrew.
Yes.
So Andrew was found first because Andrew was in the sitting room.
Sofa downstairs.
Yeah, and he's laying on the couch trying to take a nap, whatever. Kind of had a headache. Gonna lay down. Well, you're gonna have more of a headache now that you have a hatchet going through your skull.
What head?
Sorry, bad joke, splitting headache. Mm. Sorry. Couldn't help it. So I'm here all night. So he, you know, he's getting killed by somebody, and Abby is upstairs, unaware that she's dead. She had died prior to Andrew. That they know because she was home. But then they didn't know about it until afterwards. And it wasn't, Lizzie didn't even know. She was told by Maggie, the housekeeper, the maid, that Mr. Borden was dead. Like, she was oblivious to her father being dead. Even though she was in the house, she either played it off or she didn't know. One of the two. And then they were asking about her stepmother, where she's at. Nobody knows. And then she's like, oh, I think she might be upstairs. So then somebody went up and checked on her, and she's on the floor bleeding out because she's dead from same hatchet wounds as her husband.
Blunt force trauma.
Yeah. So then they call the police, and the police get involved. Leah, you want to tell us about what happened after the police were called?
Sure. All right. So let's get into the nitty gritty in this. All right. So the Bordens received 29 whacks to be total. The poem of, like, was it? Lizzie Borden took an axe and gave her mother 40 whacks. So when she saw what she had done, she'd give her mother 40, her father 41.
Mm-hmm.
No, she did 29. What was that?
I said, so the story goes, but, you know, they embellish.
Oh, of course. So it was actually 29. And I would say, when media got involved, a lot more of, like, finger pointing and embellishments really started coming in. Kind of like today, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, to back it up a little bit, I would say we could start, like, from the crime scene. Because I think that makes the most sense. So, Maggie was in the house, and then Lizzie and her parents. Now, according to the sources I read, it was Lizzie who called Maggie to come down and say father was dead. Somebody came in and killed him because Maggie was actually laying down. No, I'm sorry. She was cleaning windows. My bad. So a half hour later, so they said the body was hacked almost beyond recognition of Andrew Borden. Now, I want to kind of get into, you know, I guess I can get into, like, the gruesome part of it. And I'm only doing that because I'm going to get back to that later. So we'll start over with the left temple had a wound 6 by 4 inches wide, and it's been made as if impounded by the dull edge of the axe. The left eye was dug out and a cut extended from the length of the nose. The face was hacked to pieces and the blood covered the shirt. Okay. But the room itself was in order. No scuffle of any kind, right?
Right.
So the speculation is really he was laying down and this came out of nowhere. So he didn't have time to fight back. Same thing with Abby, though. It was stated that Abby had to have been hit by somebody from behind and taller than her. I don't know if Lizzie was taller than her or not.
Lizzie was short. She was, like, barely 5 foot.
But how big was Abby?
Let me get back to you on that one.
Right. So, now, what excuse is me. Funny is... What?
I coughed. I just said excuse me.
So what's funny about this is, just so... We're going to come back to it, maybe. Just so everyone knows... That morning, a worker had come to the home asking for payment from Mr. Borden, and he didn't have the money and told him to come back later. But whatever reason, that only gets stated once in some of the articles that I've read, and then it never gets brought up again. And that to me is like a bunch of red flags, but I'm not sure why that never gets spoken about. So the police feel like this has happened from somebody in the home, and suspicion was turned obviously to Lizzie because Emma was out of town. And then they said that they found it odd that Lizzie didn't know where Abby's whereabouts were, because I'm going to be honest. Do we all like sit there and have a tracker on our families when we're in the house? So do we always know where somebody is? Lizzie said she went upstairs around 9 a.m. to put Shams on the pillows. Do we all just kind of stand there and wait and see where the person goes from room to room and what they're doing?
Right.
So
I know you're in the house and that's about it.
Yeah. So they're saying it was odd that Lizzie didn't know where she was. Well, I don't know where everybody else. They're home. They're home. I don't know where they are 24/7. And I don't know how many times that I've come down to my office and do something, and all of a sudden, like an hour later, somebody's coming down the stairs going, oh, there you are. I was wondering where you went. So it just happens. Lizzie said she was...
Sorry, to get back to how tall Abby was, she's 5'3". That's so how tall Abby was.
Okay.
And Lizzie was 5'4". Okay, she's a little taller than
She was taller than her, yeah.
Yeah, but not by much.
No, no.
So here's where all the trial stuff starts, and some of this makes me mad, some of it kind of makes me giggle a little bit, but... So August 9th, the inquest goes into the Borden murders. And before this all went before the original criminal magistrate, Josiah Blaisdell, and then the district attorney was Hosea Knowlton at that time. They questioned Lizzie Borden, Bridget Sullivan, and a household guest, John Morris, and which possibly some others.
John Morris is the uncle.
The uncle. So with this 4 hours of examination, they said that Lizzie was giving confusing, contradictory answers. Okay. Mm-hmm. A few days later, they went to Police Chief Hillard, and he arrested Lizzie, and she entered a plea of not guilty on the charges of murder. I'm going to say this again, on the charges of murder. So we got to remember what she's charged with,
mm-hmm.
and then what burden of proof that's going to lay on the state side. She was transported, went over to the jail. The jail was like about eight or nine miles north of Fall River. She returned to Fall River on August 22nd and had her prelim hearing. And this is what irritated me. Judge Blaisdell pronounced that she was, in quotations, probably guilty.
Yep.
Probably guilty? Like, that's not going to stand in today's court, but okay, cool. Back then, apparently, probably guilty is a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And ordered her to face the grand jury. And again, possible charges for the murder of her parents. Possible charges. So she's not really even charged yet. So this whole thing is kind of messed up from day one. All right. So in November, grand jury meets. They reconvene and heard new evidence from Alice Russell, who was a family friend, and she stayed with the Borden sisters in the days following the murders. Russell, a little two-timer. Anyway, Russell told the grand jurors that she witnessed Lizzie burning her blue dress in a kitchen fire. Lizzie explained that the dress was covered in old paint. So coupled with the earlier testimony that Lizzie was wearing a blue dress on the morning of the murders, that was enough for the grand jurors to indict Lizzie for the murders.
But there's no physical evidence.
There's still nothing. Right. Mm-hmm. So the trial opened up on June 5th, and it was in New Bedford, Connecticut courthouse before the panel of three judges now. Then there was the high-powered defense team, which is Andrew Jennings, and then George Robinson, who happened to be a former governor of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. And then District Attorney Knowlton was still there, and then Thomas Moody. They were arguing for the state. So we had a jury of, at this time, 12 men. And then Moody starts the case and immediately kind of just like throws down this package of, it was like a bag of something, and in the bag was the skulls of Andrew and Abby. And at the sight of that, Lizzie falls into like a faint that lasted some time.
So with that part there, they were told after they pulled the bodies out and they were going to have the funeral, they did the funeral. And after they did the funeral, the judge, or the, I should say the mayor at the time, had written a subpoena for them to behead the bodies so that they could use those in court.
It's terrible.
And not tell the girls that they were doing this.
So terrible.
Go ahead, Leah. Sorry, I wanted to put that little fact in there.
Right, it's absolutely terrible.
I can see why she would faint.
Right.
Well, so to be honest, though, okay, so with the head, though, they took and they took all the skin off of it. It was just the skull. So it wasn't like you would think of, they beheaded the person, they put it in a bag and brought it to court. That's not what it was. They actually soaked it and where it was, you know, in the lye, and took all the you know, material off of the skull itself. And then they presented it.
And then as they were presenting it, Moody was explaining how Lizzie would be like the only person having a motive and opportunity to commit the double murders. So, and I enjoy the fact that he said that, because I think her defense team slammed the crap out of that, and I appreciate that. So for the several witnesses, like there was from the state, there was Bridget Sullivan, and she had said that Lizzie was the only person she saw in the home at the time that the parents were married, or married, ha, murdered. And then she had said that there was not an unpleasant relationship between Lizzie and Abby. And the family had all said that as well. Like, there's this idea that Lizzie and Abby didn't get along and Lizzie didn't like Abby. But nobody else is saying that within the family. And then it was testified by the person who was testifying against Lizzie, even said, okay, well, everything was kind of pleasant between those two. Mm-hmm. So a little odd there. So Sullivan also said that Andrew and Abby had like stomach pains the day before, and that Lizzie was seen at a pharmacy trying to purchase poison, like some sort of poison. Right. Or maybe she did poison, or tried to poison, or tried to
prussic, poison. Prussic acid? I had to look that up. I never heard of it.
Cyanide. I haven't heard of it either.
Yeah.
So there was also another household guest, John Morris. He was there. He was 60, but he was having breakfast in the home in the morning and then left. So he didn't witness anything. However, he was there the morning of and didn't notice anything odd or out of sorts. Dad got up as normal business. He left the house for about 2 hours. Many witnesses came forward and said, like, he was here at these certain times. So it seemed like he was doing his normal everyday thing before this went down. Again, guy comes in asking for money and dad doesn't have it. And yet he doesn't even get called. Anyway, moving on. You see, that's bugging me a lot. So, continuing on, the defense kind of came forward and said, okay, first of all, they said that the trial was full of surprises and there was many contradictions given by witnesses. And the defense also said that there's no way that everything that has been done could have been done in the timeline that the state was trying to put out there. The defense said that the government's timeline, which allowed from 8 to 13 minutes between Andrew's murder and Lizzie's call to Bridget, how would you wash the blood off the off your clothes and hide the weapon within that shortest span of time? And we're going to go back to the gruesome scene. with the amount of injury done to that skull, I can't imagine the blood splatter not being all over that person's face, hands, arms, mm-hmm. whatnot. Yeah. How would Lizzie clean all of herself Ouch. Up?
Right.
And then call the maid down. It doesn't make sense to me. And they never found the weapon.
Well, and the other thing is, it's a head wound. And anybody that knows about head wounds, they bleed a lot. You get a little mm-hmm. cut, it's bleeding like you just ripped open your skin.
Mm-hmm.
And so for him, I mean, his nose was basically hanging off his face. And his eye was just hanging on his cheekbone. That's how hard that this person, whoever did it, was hacking away at him. And there's not a lot of blood. You're telling me that couch soaked up all of it, or his clothes soaked up all that blood?
Mm-hmm.
There's no way.
Defense also said that, and this is where I agreed with the judges too. They did what was right in this point, where they looked at the original, I wouldn't say confession, excuse me, I'd say written statement and testimony that Lizzie gave in the very beginning. Judges concluded that Lizzie, at the time of this inquest, was a prisoner charged with two murders, and that her testimony was made in the absence of her attorney and was not voluntary. And then she should have been warned that she had the right under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution to remain silent, which she was not given that opportunity or told.
So there was no Miranda rights read to her.
Correct. But I don't believe Miranda was
a thing back then.
A thing at that time. No, not yet. So the judges rejected the state's argument that Lizzie was the only suspect and not a prisoner at the time of the inquest. And the prosecution ended up resting their case on June 14th with that last defeat there. The state also wanted to have a druggist named Eli Bence to recount for the jury his story of Lizzie joining or visiting the drugstore the day before the murders and asking for the prussic acid. And judge, I believe, did not allow his testimony. So the defense presented maybe a handful of witnesses, not too many. But the people that they did have was like Charles Gifford and Uriah Kirby, and with who Uriah Kirby reported seeing a strange man at the boarding house around 11 o'clock at night the night before. And then Dr. Benjamin Hadfi testified that he saw a young man on the sidewalk near 92nd Street, which was nearby, at 10:30 on August 4th. And a plumber testified a day or two before the murders that he had been in the Borden's barn loft and cast a doubt on the police assertions that Lizzie's alibi, that she was in the barn when this all took place, because the dust and loft appeared undisturbed, but they were in there and they would have disturbed it because they were just in there a day or two before. So it didn't make sense for the police to say that the dust in the barn and the loft area was undisturbed. There's no way she was up there, when two other people were like, well, we were just up there too. So there's no way it could have just not been disturbed.
Didn't she say something too about like when the dad came home, she took his shoes off and put slippers on, but he was found with shoes on?
Well, I didn't see that.
Yeah.
And then finally came Emma.
She doesn't know.
Right?
Mark it down on the calendar.
Right? she's obviously the older sister. And Emma testified that Lizzie and her father actually had a good relationship and told jurors that he did wear this little gold ring around his finger that Lizzie gave to him years ago. And he liked it. He prized it. And Emma insisted that relationships with Lizzie and Abby were typically fine, even though there's some like lingering resentment over herself and her dad, because there's a home that Emma called as grandfather's house, and he actually left that to Abby and Lizzie and left Emma out. So Emma actually has more resentment than Lizzie did. Just throwing that out there. defense had like hoped that Emma would testify that the Borden house had this custom of just depositing remains and pieces of dresses by burning. Mm-hmm. However, court was ruling that that was going to be inadmissible evidence, which, okay, I don't know if that's inadmissible. I wish I kind of knew their grounding on that. I was looking for like what their grounds were for ruling that, but I didn't find it anywhere. So in the end, there was not any direct evidence from beginning to end against Lizzie at all. Mm-hmm. Not a blood on her. There wasn't a weapon found. In the end, it all turned out to be very circumstantial evidence against Lizzie because they had nobody else and they didn't even try for anybody else. So when we go back to the charge of actual murder, there's no way the state was able to prove that burden of guilt. And therefore, she was found not guilty. And I agree that I don't believe that she was guilty of this.
Well, even when they went in to do like the pictures that everybody can see, the pictures of Abby and Andrew, you know, they, at that time, forensics was at its infancy. Mm-hmm. And they just crumpled like all over any kind of evidence that would have been around. You know, they had like not just themselves, you know, the police department, they had relatives in there, they had the neighbors in there, people.
Well, they said it was an incredibly tainted crime scene.
Right
from the get-go. You know, so that was one of the big deterrents of prosecuting her. They said it was extremely tainted. You know, nowadays you can't even go near that, for, you know, obviously near that place, but said it was photographers and media and family, and there's all sorts of people in that house that shouldn't have been.
And there's something that the jury had said, though. I mean, I could see it as sexist, but it went to her her favor. So I guess I'll just be quiet about it. But they did say that they didn't think a woman could do something so brutal. And, you know, just saying maybe they haven't met some of the future women murderers. But, you know, all right, if you're going to feel that way about women, cool. Even more so, she didn't do it. Women aren't capable of such things.
Well, and there was a lot of protesting outside the court house with the women saying Lizzie didn't do it. And there was, I want to say it was the prosecution, the lawyer, his wife was even like, really? You're going after Lizzie? And what, because she's a woman? You know, she's there and you're not going to go after anybody else, you're not going to follow through with any other leads or anything like that. And he was kind of like, well, what do you want? She's like, do you understand that wearing a skirt adds to the stress that we have as women and stuff like that? And it just kind of built on and on and on. So it was like a big thing. It was like a women's rights type thing at that moment too. Not that we're going to get political about anything, but it was like, that was a thing at that time period that the women were kind of like, Lizzie didn't do it. You know, how could she has to deal with all this other stuff, all this other stigmatism against women and all that. How do you know a guy didn't do it? But at this point, we don't know who did it.
Did you guys read, or did Leah, did you read too, that it was a very tainted jury pool too?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they but didn't have anybody. They didn't have anybody from that Fall Creek or Fall River, rather. Anybody, no one, not one person on the jury was from that town.
Maybe that was a good thing.
Yeah,
yeah. Because who knew if they liked her or not?
Very good article from the Smithsonian Magazine. I got that from. Uh huh.
Good source.
Yeah.
But she, after that, you know, she was kind of shunned by the town, you know, and
big time.
They, even though she was found not guilty, they still didn't like her.
No, they continued to hassle her. And I was reading that, well, they stayed at the house for a little bit, the house that the parents lived in. And then they built a big house, a 14-room house, or she bought on the hill.
Oh, yeah.
And one of the first things that she, when they were looking for the house, she wanted an indoor bathroom because they had an outhouse in their original place. But the kids in the neighborhood kept on hassling them, you know, all the time, throwing stuff at the house, hassling Lizzie, who then went by the name Elizabeth, kind of trying to change her, you know, from being called Lizzie. But yeah, they get the church members shunned her, and just she had a really hard time in that town after that trial.
Mm-hmm. But like, some
would think that you would almost want to leave that town.
Yeah, and she didn't. Her sister did, I think.
Well, yeah, they said they had a huge.
Well, they lived together. They lived together. The sister moved out, and well, Lizzie started because she always liked the theater, and she started going to Boston and New York and D.C. to go into all the theaters and hanging around with the, you know, the upper class in those cities. And then she started having parties at their house all the time, which I think they named Maplecroft when she built that house.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah. And that she met some actress named Nance O'Neill, and there was gossip that Lizzie and this Nance O'Neill were having an affair. And in, let's see, what was it? 1905, the sister moved out because she said she couldn't take any more of the stuff that was going on in that house between Lizzie and this Nance O'Neill person.
Yeah, she ended up moving to New Hampshire, I believe.
Yep.
But they were saying, you know, if Lizzie was guilty, why would she stay in town?
True.
You know, if she's not guilty, what is she going to be running from? I don't know. And the house isn't that far. I mean, yeah, it's on the hill, but it's only like a few blocks away, really, from the original home. It's not a big town.
No, it was just where, you know, the upper middle class people lived.
Where she deserved to live when she was younger, but dad didn't.
Right, which they never did.
Want to do it. Daddy was frugal.
Yeah. They didn't even have like running water in the, there was no plumbing whatsoever.
No electricity.
Right, no, yeah. No bathroom in the house. You know, when they bought that house on the hill, that was one of the first things that they looked at. Like, this house has to have plumbing. We have to have running water. We have to have electricity. We have to have indoor, you know, bathroom. But yeah, I mean, their dad was really cheap.
Yeah. You
know? And I guess when he passed away, they inherited, they said in a comparative money wise today would be between $6 and $10 million. So they're quite wealthy then.
Yeah. And then when, you know, Lizzie lived in Maplecroft until she died.
Yep.
And then her money ended up going to animal shelters and rescues and stuff like that.
You're kind of like a very giving person.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's funny because like she died and 9 days later her sister died.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But apparently they never spoke from the time the sister left in 1905 until Lizzie passed away. They didn't speak anymore.
Yeah. But did you guys hear about the Borden curse?
No.
Family curse?
I saw that somewhere, but I don't remember all the detail of that.
So Scott and I were watching a documentary. Well, I don't know if you would call it a documentary. It was kind of
on Discovery.
Yeah. It was the Dave from Holzer Files. He was one of the investigators. They brought in two investigators and two psychics. One of them being a direct descendant of the Borden family. He was a cousin. They went into Lizzie's house first and they did an investigation there. They were getting a lot of EVPs. Questionable. I don't know. We were trying to listen to them. We couldn't hear. Some of them we could hear. Some of them we couldn't. But they were saying that, I was saying that there was a relative that lived next door and that one was Eliza Borden. Eliza Borden was an aunt. She married into the Borden family. She had two children that she ended up killing. And she supposedly is haunting like her house, which is right next door to the Borden house, but also the Borden house itself. And then they had a cousin, and this is where Leah, your family, your husband's family, I should say, is directly linked to the Borden family, correct? Isn't that how that went?
Yes.
So your last name was actually this person's last name that was the cousin. She was murdered by her fiance or husband, significant other. She was hung. They found her body hanging from a tree not too far away in the area. And then she had like abdominal bruising, like there was some kind of abortion that had been taking place because he didn't want to be with her. And so he didn't want to have a baby. And he tried to basically get rid of the baby. And that didn't work. So he hung her.
Lovely.
And that's kind of where the curse kind of started, was with those two. And they were saying that Eliza, they brought in the medium, and the medium was connecting. And this is the medium that is a direct descendant of the Bordens. He was connecting to Eliza. And she was saying that her children are still there, and she's trying to keep them away from him or it. And there was rumor that there was a spirit, a demon, that was in the Borden family, going from Eliza's home to Lizzie's home. And that this spirit was basically possessing them, possessed Eliza for her to kill her children. And then they were saying that Lizzie was possessed. And that's why Lizzie doesn't remember any of the murders. So they were talking, and they were trying to do this, and I can't think of the name of it. I'll have to look it up. But they were doing a seance in Maplecroft, and they were connecting with Eliza first. And then Lizzie came in, and it was Dave was sitting there at the table, and all of a sudden his arms start shaking, and they started doing automatic writing. So for those of you that don't know about automatic writing, the spirit will, he opened himself up to the spirit to come in and kind of not take over his entire body, but could inhabit his body for a time period. And so that's what he allowed. So the spirit of Lizzie came in, and you would see his arm kind of shaking and everything. And the medium that was in charge of all of this to keep them all safe gave him a pen, and he started writing, and he was asking questions. And Chris, who is the other medium, he that was in charge of everything, he would ask, who are we talking to? And Lizzie, and Dave was talking. He's like, I don't like this. This isn't what I signed up for. And he's like, just let it happen. Just write, you know, just let it write. And so he's letting his hand write. And you can see him trying to fight to get away from whatever this is. And they would say, Lizzie, did you kill your parents? And she wrote, no. And it was very like child writing, scratchy, you know, type thing. Because his hand looked like as if he had Parkinson's. That's how shaky it was. And he would write, no. And then they would ask, are you, you know, like, I don't want to talk about this anymore. You don't want to talk about this? And they should write, yes. And they were just asking questions throughout. And finally, his arm, you could see he was kind of getting lifted up off of the table or the chair. And he's like, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I really don't want to do this. So Chris had pulled him out, and he's like, okay, Lizzie, you gotta release him. He's done. You can't do this anymore. Well, the other investigator that was across from them, she started in, and she was connected to this entity and how this entity was very negative, and she could feel the negative coming through. And that was the entity that was supposedly causing this curse. And the one that was I believe his name was Sam. He was the one that is the Borden direct descendant. He was tapping into Eliza at that point, and she was just screaming that you don't want to do this. I want my kids safe, stuff like that. And it came down to they tried to get rid of this entity and kind of do a cleansing of some sort. And they were able to get rid of whatever it was that was in the investigator, finally came out of her. She was doing some automatic writing too, but not words. There were just scratches. And so because this thing, according to them, it's because this was an inhuman spirit, has never written anything, so they didn't know how to write. I don't know. I've seen things where they are supposed to be inhuman spirits and they can write things just fine.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know why this one couldn't. Then there was, they did the not a cleansing, but they were cleansing themselves. They were allowing the spirits to go. If Eliza and her children want to go, it's okay. It's safe. You can cross over. And he was saying that she had her arms open and that the children were going to be safe and she was going to be safe. And it sounded like they had crossed over, but it didn't sound like they crossed Lizzie over. It was Eliza and her children. Because I don't know if Lizzie just doesn't want to go or they didn't want to push her out of her home. I don't know. But it was kind of interesting because they were kind of going through all that stuff as well of the trial and what was transpiring through the whole thing. You know, did Lizzie have enough time? Did she strip down and kill them naked? And that's why they didn't find any blood on her clothes.
What the hell?
Yeah. Because that's one of the theories out there is that she had stripped down and did it all, you know, butt naked, and that's why they didn't find any on her clothes. Not that they searched.
But she still would have had to clean her body off. There was no time for that.
Right.
So that even if we go with the theory that she was possessed, okay, we can go supernaturally here and go with that theory.
Mm-hmm.
That still doesn't explain her being completely clean.
Right.
Like, did she in her possession or, you know, was she able to stop time too? Like they did in that 180s show where, you know, they would touch fingers and like all time stopped. Did she do that? Because that would have been a cool supernatural thing to do.
Right. I don't know.
I forgot what show that was, but I remember watching that show. Like, she touched her two fingers together and like all the time stopped around her.
So I don't know what I'm missing here, but if she didn't do it and there was this short time span and people were in the house, how come nobody heard anything?
Right.
Or saw anything?
I do wonder that. I do wonder that too. I know that... What's her name? The maid was supposed to be outside cleaning windows. Maggie. And Lizzie was out in the barn. So maybe that's why.
But they never found prints in the barn.
So they say, but that doesn't make sense. Because if they didn't find Lizzie's prints, then they would have found the other guy's prints. Because the guys had testified that they were in there just 2 days before. So they would have found something in the barn. And they said that there was nothing disturbed.
Right.
So I think the police really didn't do, and they had their minds set on what they were going to do and who they
wanted. But Maggie had to go to the barn because she was getting the water out of the barn area. So when she was cleaning the windows, she wasn't going in the house to fill up the bucket and dump the bucket. She was going into the barn. So even if he says it wasn't disturbed, Maggie had to disturb something walking into there to begin with to dump the buckets and get water.
Mm-hmm.
And Maggie was out talking to the neighbor. So where did this neighbor go? And the neighbor didn't hear anything either.
Mm-hmm.
That just makes me go back to the idea of they were really stuck on putting it on Lizzie and thinking that was going to be an easy win when in the end that ended up being the hardest one to win.
you think they went with Lizzie because, like I said before, she was the kleptomaniac? She would go out and steal things, and they already knew that she was kind of like a troublemaker to begin with. And they're like, oh, she's going to be easy because, you know, we already have all this evidence that she's stolen things before. So she's not a you know, the girl next door, the, you know, the very simple, quiet, no trouble kind of girl. She is a little bit of a rebel and a little bit of a troublemaker. So would it be easier to pin it on somebody that already has a troubled past?
So I'm just reading some articles actually from that time period. And the mayor at the time was also a surgeon. He said it was, the attack was done by a very strong man. The blows that both people received were like 6 inches into the skull, enough to hit the brain. And then they spoke to, what was the dad's name?
Andrew.
Andrew's brother-in-law, Andrew's sister's husband. And he said it could be for money. Bordens were worth $500,000 at the time, just in life insurance. And they owned a lot of property.
And you said he wasn't, Leo, you said Andrew was not liked by a lot of people in town.
Correct.
That's not what the article is saying.
No?
No, well-respected family.
And what news?
And I read that he was not liked by the people he did business with at all.
The Boston Daily Globe.
That's where you're reading that from?
Yeah.
Interesting.
This was the one I read before was August 4th, 1892. So the day it happened. And this is August 5th, 1892.
So the day after the murders. The day
after. They had a lead of an argument happening that Andrew cheated his nephew out on money or property. And that his nephew, they were in an argument and the nephew said, I'll get you for this or something. But they never followed up with that.
There's so many leads out there that they never followed up on.
Mm-hmm.
And then the show we watched last night was the brother-in-law that lived in the house.
Mm-hmm.
He was a butcher.
Oh, that's right.
He had access to a weapon similar to
a hatchet. Yes, that's right. His brother-in-law was a butcher. And so he would be able to carry.
Well, that's a little like interesting that. Now, isn't it?
And knew how to use the weapon.
Right. So, I don't know. There's so many. It's like it's going to be unsolved unless you get a time machine and be able to go back in time. I don't think they even can do the forensics on it now because I don't think there's anything. I think it's all contaminated.
Yeah, so the board.
I don't think anything was kept.
Real estate and railroad stock.
Railroad stock and real estate.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And to throw in there, I couldn't not for the life of me remember the year, but I know it was Miranda versus Arizona on the Supreme Court. It was 1966. So that's when the Miranda rights went into play. So
not
back at this time, but I couldn't remember the year for, I knew it was in the 1900s. I couldn't remember when.
Okay.
But yes,
but they still had something similar at that point. It wasn't.
Right. You still have rights. It's just, you didn't have to read them the rights. However, this is what happens when you go to court is if you're writing your statement under duress and being forced to write something and then being forced to write it without the presence of an attorney and not being told you can remain silent, you know, the judge did the absolute right thing at that point.
Right. What were you going to say, Scott?
I just say, just reading this article, it's, you know, money could be a motive for murder here. He had real estate worth $250,000, life insurance policy of $500,000. He had stocks in railroads and in the banks.
That's a lot of money. But then,
well,
okay.
Look at,
If you
they said it was about $10 million, if you know, in current money, that the
today's value.
Yeah, what the daughters got.
Right.
I mean, I think for sure, no matter what, whoever did it, I think it was for money.
Right, but with all this, the stocks and everything, who was going to be the beneficiary? It was going to be the girls and the wife, I'm assuming.
The wife would have been first, then the daughters. So she took both of them out so the daughters could date.
Hired somebody.
Yep.
Maybe they did.
Hired hitman.
I'm going to be out of town. Lizzie will be at home. We'll hire somebody to come in, kill mom and dad. We'll pay you money.
Well, that's another theory.
I don't see a motive for that, though. You're saying money is the motive, but it's not like they were, you know, hurting for the money either.
Yeah, they were saying that he could go on any day and take out $500,000 in cash. Wow.
Yeah, he had, but I think just look at the Lizzie and her sister, and you know, when you first start reading all this, where you know, to them they lived in poverty compared to their family. You know, they had an outhouse, they had no running water, they had no electricity. Lizzie liked to go to the theater, and she liked nice clothes and everything else, but she wasn't getting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there you go. There's a motive. Right. I want.
He wasn't getting, and the means were there to get it, but right. He was not being given. Right. The opportunity.
Right.
You know.
There was a lot that Andrew could lose, you know, if he made the wrong enemy. Was it his daughter that turned against him? Was it, you know, the nephew? Was it the brother-in-law? Was it somebody in the community itself? There's so many variables on this that
yeah.
We just, you don't know unless
they'll never say it'll be unsolved forever.
Right. That's what I said. If we could go and get the forensics done, it'd be, you know, it would be solved, but it's all contaminated because God only knows how many people have touched that axe from the time that, you know, they killed him.
If that was even the ad, the one they found downstairs?
I think that one. Because I don't think they found one out in the...
No, because that one, the one of them had a broken handle. Yeah. Right. One of the hatchets had a busted handle, so they figured that was it.
Yeah. But, you know, and then, like you said, who has the time to clean up? Where did Andrew's blood all go?
So you think they could have been killed somewhere else?
Maybe
there'd be trails everywhere.
I don't mean. I mean, outside of the house, somewhere.
No, I still think that he was murdered in the house. I just don't think that somebody could clean themselves up that quickly.
Right.
Especially back then, because there were no showers.
Well, yeah, and then
not in their house anyway.
No, yeah, not in their house.
That's true.
Or theirs was you get a bucket and then you know stand in a basin and. Get yourself wet that way.
Yeah,
all they could do. But you know, even still, there should have been blood splattered on the walls, on the ceiling.
Everywhere.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying. If there wasn't, there was a small amount of time when all this supposedly took place. How can there not be any of that?
Right. Were there other people in the house though, so that they prepared? Like Andrew was supposed to be taking a nap. So did they put up like sheets somewhere?
Was there any upstairs by stepmom, I should say?
I believe there was some on the wall in front of her.
But nothing by dad?
No.
Interesting.
Yeah.
At least from what I've seen and read, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah. Because everyone just, you know, obviously dad with his face caved in, you know, there would be. Stuff everywhere. There'd be brain matter. There'd be crap everywhere.
Right.
You know, skull fragments, brain matter. There'd be junk everywhere. Mom got bashed. I think it was on the back of the head. I think she got killed. So, but dad's was flat out gruesome and there'd be stuff everywhere.
Okay. So Maggie was outside the house. Didn't they also have a hand a handyman also that lived or worked there? Wasn't there a young man?
I believe so.
Did anybody ever interview him?
So there's a James Eddy who runs the Board Farm and another guy. And I guess the guy that delivered the milk to the city was at the house before the murders. And he and Mr. Borden had high words over some wages, which Mr. Borden owed this guy money.
Mm-hmm.
See, there's another one he owed money to. Because he was a cheap ass. No wonder why he was rich. He didn't pay anybody.
Right?
You know? Yeah.
But
yeah, I don't know. I can't make up my mind yet.
I'm pretty dead set on the fact that Lizzie didn't do it.
Well, you're wrong.
I don't know. I would like to read into this a little more, because I heard about it, but I didn't know a whole lot about it until I started reading this yesterday. This is interesting.
So I was also reading in here that they did the autopsy, and that they were sending out the intestines and liver and all that stuff to all the organs to a different place to have tested to see if they were poisoned.
Oh.
Because they were both very healthy people.
Mm-hmm.
Even for his age, they said he was in remarkable health.
Huh.
Yeah, that acid that supposedly she went to go buy the day before. I never heard of that. But I looked it up and see what it was. I believe it was it cyanide? I think it was cyanide.
I think it was cyanide.
Which is extremely toxic. Except
the visitor, Morris, was taken violently ill on the night previous to the murders.
Oh. Leads to the
suspicion that an attempt was then made on their lives with poison.
Hmm.
So everybody in the house, except for John Morris, were sick.
Mm-hmm. That's from eating five-day-old food.
But he stayed for breakfast.
Six-day-old food.
So he apparently didn't eat it.
Hmm.
And then he left, and then Andrew was dead.
She had been poisoned. So Mrs. Borden thought that she had been poisoned in some way by eating baker's bread.
Hmm.
The daughter, Lizzie, was taken sick at midnight, and in the morning, the servant girl, Bridget, did not hear Mr. Morris was sick at all.
Hmm.
Something smells fishy here.
Sounds like somebody is trying to take out the whole family. Just little saying.
Set up job here.
Right. Okay, well, even still, okay, so.
Why not be the older daughter?
Yeah, nobody really talks about. Well, she wasn't even home, though. She was 15 miles away, but she could have had somebody come in and kill her family. But
I also read that there was never a note found or a sick friend found that she claims to be at.
Right.
You know, I thought that was interesting, too. Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, was she the actual killer?
Yeah.
She, you know, but then to John Morris was the brother-in-law. That was their biological mother's brother.
Brother, yep.
So, you know, how was he with Andrew remarrying so soon after his sister had passed away? You know, did he have some ill will against his brother-in-law and his brother-in-law's wife? Maybe. Emma wasn't around. They're saying that she's 15 miles away, but like you said, Brian, there's no sick person that they can find. You know, the hand... farmhand, he got into words with Andrew in the morning about wages. He could have done it. You know,
how could they not find the person that she was supposed to be with, the sick person? How do you just not, you know what I mean? How did the, when they're investigating.
How do you not investigate her if she was supposedly?
Well, just her? Yeah. I mean, so was she 15 miles away then?
Yeah.
Right.
You know.
But that's what makes me think that they had this against Lizzie from the beginning and just weren't going to investigate other leads. It's just like they had their person in their mind, and that was that.
Right.
Ooh.
I think the whole thing was very shoddy. And I think a lot of the trial in the beginning was very shoddy as well.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You're probably guilty, so you're going to be charged.
We're just going to charge you, and we're gonna make sure that everybody believes that you did it. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking about over here?
Morris. John Morris is said to have been paying market attention to one of the daughters, one of his nieces.
Scandal
affair?
Yeah.
Daddy found out?
Yeah, because Daddy doesn't...
Brother-in-law kills him?
Yeah, Daddy doesn't like his daughters, you know, going out and finding men. He doesn't think they're ready for it. So now you're saying that the uncle had a thing for his nieces. He's finding that out of a newspaper article too.
I had read something about that. Let's see if I can find it here.
Is that still out of the Boston Globe?
Yeah. Boston Globe, August 5th, 1892.
All these articles are like the next day.
It's like just loaded with
scandals.
There's a lot of info on if you start digging into this.
I'm using newspapers.com.
Okay. Newspapers.com, just so you know. He's showing me the newspaper. It's just article right down the page, article after article of different things that are going on with the Borden family. This isn't how big is the town that they're from? It's not that big.
No. Fall River.
Yeah. In Massachusetts.
Yep.
Let's see. It's going to give us now, you know, how big it is now, but.
So they're saying that the wife was killed first.
Yeah, the wife was killed first, and then but she was found second.
Right.
It's at the time, the city wasn't very old either. The city was founded, it was settled in 1670, incorporated as a town in 1803, incorporated as a city in 1854.
Well, 1870, the population was 26,000.
Yeah, and now 2020, the population was 94,000. So, I mean, mm-hmm. It's obviously expanded since then, but... It's not that big of a town. I mean, nowadays it's about the same size as Racine and Kenosha area. But at the time it was kind of like a township or a village. But back then it was like a city. But it's everybody knows everybody's business. And you're telling me there's not somebody in that town that didn't know what was happening at the Borden's house? There's not right. That one neighbor that knows everything that goes on.
A nosy neighbor?
Yeah.
Every neighborhood's got one.
Right. And you're telling me that they didn't have one? That sounds kind of suspicious, too. I don't know. I don't. Like we said, it's never going to get...
It's never going to get solved. Never.
But, I mean, it's a good story to, you know... try to figure out. I mean, I'm sure that they talk about this in, you know, the law. Anybody that goes to law school, it's probably a story that they talk about.
The most botched case in history. You know?
What not to do, what to do.
Exactly.
Especially police force, too, of what, you know, when you're going in for forensic science, what to look for, what not to do, how to not contaminate a crime scene.
There's so many cases like this have been so contaminated and messed up in court that, I mean, that's where all these Supreme Court cases come from and why we have what we have today. Like, like the Miranda rules and stuff like that with Miranda versus Arizona. It happened a lot, especially early on in our history. But yes, this was a huge one that I was able to write a whole paper on as to why I agreed with the outcome. And I truly don't believe that she did it.
Well, for those that want to go to Lizzie Borden's house, you can go and visit, and you can actually stay at the Lizzie Borden house. And this is the house that the family was killed in. It's now a bed and breakfast and a museum. So throughout the house, they have pictures of things of not just the family, but of the crime itself on the walls and things like that. They have different things out for people to see. You can go and stay at the Borden house, but you know, it's not one that is easily to get into because of its history. But you can go to the house itself to see it as a museum. The address for it is 2030 Second Street, Fall River, Massachusetts.
You note the address change there?
I don't think they actually changed the address. It's
yes,
still,
yes, they did.
Did they?
Yeah, the address got changed.
Okay. But they were still, it was always on Second Street, though, I thought.
Yeah. So okay. It was like 92 or 93. Second, and then they change it to 230.
Okay, probably because of the town getting bigger.
Yeah, I was wondering the same thing.
I bet you they were the mayor was pressuring the police and like we need to close this.
Well, maybe,
and that's why they were going after Lizzie so hard.
Yeah,
I'm sure there was a lot more to it, and just frustrated that it focused so much on her when all these bigger leads were out there
that never got pursued.
Right. And the case itself was just so circumstantial. There was no way a prosecuting attorney was going to be able to slam dunk this one. And the fact that the state jumped on it, I mean, states don't typically will jump on cases that they don't feel has enough. And I don't see how the state that felt that they had anywhere near enough to actually charge with a full charge of murder.
Yeah.
Is the place actually haunted? Or is it just a B&B now?
Yeah, no, it's they. I'm looking at their website right now, and they have ghost tours.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It's just too bad it's too far.
Well, here's the thing for that.
Oh, no.
I know, Scott, you have something that you want to talk about. So they have accommodations there. I'm reading this off of their website. 7 days a week. It's got 6 rooms, including 2 suites with 2 beds each. Each bedroom is maintained in the late Victorian style. However, all the features brand new, like the sink and
like,
all.
Like Brunder.
New, brand new mattresses. I think that's kind of funny that they put that on there. They do tours. 90-minute guided house tours are offered daily from 10 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. Outdoor walk ghost tours nightly, starting at 7:30 p.m. Interactive and hands-on ghost hunt on the first floor and basement at 10 p.m. And for those of you that cannot go to Massachusetts to the Lizzie Borden house, they do offer virtual ghost tours and house tours. They are available on demand 24/7, so you can enjoy the Lizzie Borden experience from anywhere in the world. There you go.
Why in God's name would you have a virtual ghost tour?
I don't know, but you can still go and do a ghost tour online.
Huh.
What were you going to say?
I just find it interesting. This is the Boston Post, Saturday morning, August 6th. So 2 days after the murder. And police authorities have practically abandoned every other theory of the murder. It would seem Lizzie Borden, the dead man's daughter, and John Morris are under the closest surveillance.
It's only 2 days after the murder.
I was just going to say that. Without looking into, just like Leah was saying there, without looking into any one of these other leads, they had their victim, what's the word I'm looking for? Their
suspects.
Their suspects in line, lined up already, and this is the way we're going. And there's so many other options that were out there.
She was just screwed from the very beginning. There was no way around it. That was some shoddy police work there. 2 days.
Why was she trying to buy poison, though?
Exactly.
And
don't buy cyanide for a bellyache, though.
No. I thought there was something with like the birds, her pigeons or whatever. Like some animal was getting in, and then
it's the pigeons.
There's got to be a reason.
Yeah, kill them.
And they denied her the poison.
You know what? We can go there and spend a couple nights, and then go right to Salem.
Sounds good, Brian.
There we go.
Yeah.
I'm in on that.
Yeah.
There's got to be a reason for her to buy that if it's available to buy. People must have been buying it for something. So if it's available to buy, then people are buying it for something.
Right.
Cyanide
was used in mining, but there wasn't very much mining.
It's purisic acid. And she told the druggist that she needed it to clean a sealskin cape.
Oh.
The druggist refused to sell it to her. So, weird.
Yeah.
What was it called again, Steve?
It's spelled P-R-U-S-S-I-C. Purisic acid.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like prussic, or I don't even know how to say it. I had to look it up, too. I never heard of it either.
Well, you know, back then, Coca-Cola had cocaine in it. So, I mean, who knows what people were using weird stuff for. At that point, they didn't know. That's why most of the people were sick and dying early. Looking to see what the uses were for it.
Yeah, I am too.
Killing your parents.
Well, it's like a killing agent in whaling harpoons. That's what it's used for, usually.
Whaling is big in Boston.
Yeah. Although it proved quite dangerous to the crew deploying it, and it was quickly abandoned. From the middle of the 18th century, it was used in a number of poisoning murders and suicides.
There you go.
Maybe he thought that she was going to kill herself. And like, no, I don't want that kind of, you know, thing on my conscience. You know,
she's going to kill mommy and daddy.
Right.
You know.
It's basically cyanide.
This reminds me a lot of like last week, you know, the Amityville, everyone's going to have their own opinions on this, you know, and it's never going to be proven at all.
So Scott just found an article.
August 7th. And it's axe found by Mayor Colligan.
Why is the mayor finding the axe?
Now, that's interesting. Where did he find it?
Title at that point.
It's one of the titles.
But still, what's the mayor doing?
Because they could have sworn the one downstairs was it with the broken axe handle. And everybody back then had hatchets.
A lot of blood, as it believed to be, was found on the skirt of the closest, in the closet of Ms. Lizzie Borden, who was asked to explain its presence.
So there was a spot of blood found on a dress.
I did read that several times.
But only like a minuscule amount. Yep. Right? Like they said like a very, very tiny amount.
Yep. It's a little spot.
You would think she would have, if she found both parents dead, she would have some kind of blood on her.
Agree.
Especially her father, you know. If she was truly that close to her dad, you're not going to sit there and like... touch your father and you're going to be screaming at the top of your lungs pretty much.
Well, yeah, but then again, too, you go downstairs and see your dad's head the way it is. I don't know if you'd be more frightened than anything.
Yeah, but I mean,
you know, you're not going to go up and give him a kiss.
No, but in our line of work, I've noticed that families, they go up to the people and they're trying to... You can see that the person is dead. You know for a fact the person is dead, but the family members will go up to them and, you know, hug them and kiss them and shake them. And
I did it to my dad.
Wake them. And, you know, they're they're in shock, and they're like, no, this isn't happening. And they try to touch the person to make sure that they are in fact dead. So, I mean, she might still have been in shock. She might not have touched him, but 9 times out of 10,
you're good. She with that, with all that yuck downstairs on the couch. Yeah, I agree. There's going to be something.
And they had long dresses.
I was just going to say that. Wiping it as you're walking, you're going to pick up something.
Right. Because women back then couldn't even show their ankles. Yeah. That was like a big no-no.
Yeah.
So they had dresses that were down on the floor. You're going to, if he's bleeding everywhere, she's going to have some blood on her. Mm-hmm. But again, she should have a lot more though.
Yeah.
And did they check on Maggie? Did Maggie have any blood on her?
No. No one ever said.
Yeah.
No one ever said if she was even talked to.
Right.
You know, interviewed. It's, who knows?
But 2 days after, they're like, no, we're done. We've exhausted
everything. Yeah, their mind made look up. At any their mind is made up. I'm beginning to side with Leah on this one.
I've been saying she's been innocent since I did my paper and I looked into her, right? I had to study more about the trial. Mm-hmm. And after just studying the trial and going through what a state needs to do to prove a murder charge and knowing that they didn't even come remotely close to proving anything, at that point I just started really questioning, like, did she really, or is this just one of those myths that we're going to believe until the end of time, and it's just going to be one of those debated things?
Right.
I think, is it still an open case, just unsolved?
Yeah, it's still an unsolved mystery.
I knew it was unsolved. I didn't know if it was still open or not.
Yeah. Yeah, tonight on Unsolved Mysteries. Oh, I missed his voice.
Wicked Darkness presents... Lizzie
Borden
evidence. Yeah.
I'm just looking to see.
That'd be so big.
You were asking about the spirits and stuff like that of her being, the house being haunted.
Yeah, I was going to ask who's supposedly haunting it.
That's what I'm looking into. As far as, like, we were watching that last night. This was quite recent, actually.
Within 4 years, the
investigation had happened. Yeah, within the last 4 years. So they were having EVPs, they were having shadow figure walk by.
Shadow figure.
The one that we kind of caught, you know, that they had talked about it on the thing, but we were trying to figure it out too, is they have like a metal, what is that for the heat? Not the register. What are those? I can't think of the name of them. The one that was at the stairs, the banging that we heard.
Radiator?
Yeah, like a radiator type thing. It's a tall one. It, like they had in old houses, because this is now they have electricity in this house. Obviously, they got plumbing and all that stuff. But it's right at the stairs, going upstairs. There's this metal, I guess it was like the heating system, and you hear banging, two bangs on it. And you're like, okay, that's weird, because it, you could see it caught them off guard too. It was like, what was that sound? Hmm. And then they caught some EVPs. Like I said, we were trying to listen to them. Their recorder, whatever recorder they were using, it sounded more like a spirit box when they were playing the recording back.
A lot of static.
It was a lot of static. It was really, really difficult to hear some of them. Some of them were very clear. The one she was using, like a tablet, and she played the EVP and it said, "I'm a good daughter." But then she reversed it and it played back, "My daughter was raped." And their theory was that their mom, Lizzie and Emma's mom, Sarah, was still there and saying that their daughter, Lizzie, was raped. And so they wanted to, she wanted to get that out there. And then the I'm a good daughter.
Clean her name.
They were kind of in between if it was Lizzie or if it was Isabella or Isabel. Liz, I can't think of her name now. Eliza. Thank you. There we go. Eliza. So because she had killed the children. So they weren't sure if it was her or Lizzie. But it came across as I'm a good daughter. And it was funny because listening to it, it also had the New England accent, which kind of threw me too. Because normally when you're hearing EVPs, and we've been doing this for a long time, the EVPs, and I don't know why, I don't have a theory behind this yet. I wish I did, is that our EVPs, when we catch them, they all pretty much have that same accent. Some of them are a little different, but this one that they played was a very strong New England accent. Like you could tell that it was from the Boston area. And then, like I said, there was other ones. They even went out to the property that John Morris, the brother-in-law, owned. The home is no longer there. It's just woods. But they were... They had an SLS that they were using, and then they had some digital voice recorders going along with cameras, obviously. And they were capturing things, but they were in the woods, and they were talking about, at one point, they showed in the camera two glowing eyes. Again, they're in the woods, and they felt something surrounding them. Kind of, you could hear it walking around. It could have been an animal. One minute it was there, the eyes were glowing, looking right at them. The next minute it's gone. But they were using the spirit box at that point, and one of the things that came across was Satan.
Ooh.
And they had gotten a couple things like that, even in the home when they were back at the Borden home. But when they were at Morris's house, his property, it was kind of iffy because, like I said, they were outside. And it could have been an animal that was kind of tracking them, trying to figure things out, you know. It was dark, so you couldn't really see that well in the property. It was very thick with the woods, but even so, they went back to the home, and then they were doing EVPs there. And a couple of them were, you know, they came up with the Satan again. And there were other ones that they were saying, but like I said, you couldn't really hear it because it was very staticky. And I'll try to see if I can find that, because it was on Discovery Channel. But it was basically an investigation without being a part of a team. They brought people in separately. It wasn't like the normal, they always work together.
Yeah.
Anybody else got anything else? Any kind of theories they got floating around in their heads?
Not really. We've hit quite a bit of them.
We have. I mean, we kind of can leave it up to the audience of what they think, what they believe happened.
There's tons of information on this.
Yeah.
You know, this, we could have looked up crap on here for a week, you know, just all different theories and people they've talked to. But yeah, I'm really kind of starting to site with Leah on this one.
I am too now. I agree. Yeah.
See, you convinced two of us, kid. Good job.
Not 100% convinced, but
I'm the same way as Steve. But I'm leaning that way, but not 100%.
Yeah.
So,
what do you think, Scott? Are you?
I don't agree with Leah.
Just because it's Leah.
Just because it's Leah.
Yeah, but it's a hate relationship.
No, I. Wow.
The day you need me in court, you'll agree with me then. I got your back.
No, I do. I agree with the guys.
No.
I don't know what Deb thinks, but
Deb, what do you think?
Somebody killed him. We'll never know. I mean, it happened how many, 2,000 years ago, 200 years ago, whatever. 2,000 years ago. When they didn't have internet. They didn't have all this technology that we do today. We'll never know.
No, I agree there too.
Yeah.
This will never be solved. Never.
So the show that we were watching was on Discovery Plus. It's called The Curse of Lizzie Borden. And that's where they had the paranormal team go in. They went into Lizzie's childhood home. They went into Maplecroft. And then they went to John Morris's location where his house was. So if anybody wants to watch that show.
Residence now.
Yeah, I don't know if they have that. It seemed like they still had it like it was like a museum. Because
I thought it was a private residence.
No, because they went inside and it was still set up like Victorian style.
It was.
All right. But all your history's not there anyway. It's at the original house. So,
what do you think, Kathy? You
know? Honestly, I think she got set up. I don't know if she is completely off the hook. If you know, I don't think that she did it personally, but I
maybe involved.
She might have been somewhat involved, yeah. But
love triangle.
Yeah, I mean,
money,
she
knows.
I think, yeah, cash might have been the number one motive.
Maybe, Dad, the other thing, you know, you're talking about John Morris having a thing for his nieces, possibly was a theory. Maybe Dad found out that Lizzie had a thing with Maggie. And it, no, we're not going there. That's not right, you know, type thing.
Maggie was protective.
Right.
Of Lizzie.
She was very protective of Lizzie. So maybe there was that love triangle. So I don't know. Maybe, of course, my dogs start barking. It wouldn't be an episode.
That's okay. We're almost done. That's all
right. Right? That's just Susie saying hi to everybody.
Yeah, hi.
So, I mean, maybe that was another thing. You know, I don't know. It's the story is still going to keep.
It's fascinating.
Yeah,
it is fascinating.
Yeah, very fascinating. It's going to keep going on for decades and decades because it's just
it's that, too bad. It's 2,000 miles from here.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm.
Cousin Lizzie is innocent.
Well, she is. She is a cousin of yours through marriage. Yep. I mean,
cousin Lizzie, I got you back. We're good.
And it just shows how much the detectives and the police work has progressed since that time too.
Right. I mean, well, you know, there are those couch detectives that are sitting here on the internet and trying to solve mysteries left and right. They've done it. Who knows? Maybe they will solve it in probably not our lifetime. Maybe they'll come up with some kind of technology in the future that our grandchildren will have.
And that's who Jack the Ripper is.
See? Jack the Ripper, who is that?
Yeah.
And the Villisca axe murderer, who is that?
Yeah, this is very similar to that.
Yeah, so I mean, who knows? We don't know.
No.
But I think Lizzie did kind of get the short end of the stick as far as the investigation goes. I don't think they did a great job of, you know, looking at all the leads.
Yeah. They didn't exhaust all their leads at all.
No
way.
There's no way. No way. Nope. But unfortunately, I mean, Lizzie is now gone. She's in the family plot area along with her sister. They buried
my dad
right next to her. So maybe, hopefully, Lizzie is at peace. Maybe her family altogether is at peace. They've found out on the other side who actually did it. Hopefully the family can be at rest and, you know, live their lives on the other side.
Oh.
Hmm. Without fear of any kind of persecution on that side.
Yeah.
But, you know, we leave it up to our listeners and what they think and who they think might have done it. We've given you a lot of options, between Lizzie, the brother-in-law, the farmhand, some strange boy that was around the house the night before.
Milkman. Business endeavors. I mean,
we've given you a lot of options. So we'd love to hear what you think about Lizzie Borden and the Axe Murders. Give us a shout out and let us know what you think.
I would like to hear people's feedback on this one.
Really?
This would be interesting. Yeah. What other people think.
So you can we have our Facebook page of Wicked Darkness with Sue Pitt. So you can go there, follow us on Facebook. You can also follow us on our Sue Pitt page on Facebook and our website. If you want to drop us a line, you can send us an email at supit@gmail.com. That's supit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear what you think of the whole thing. What you know, did Lizzie do it? Did she not do it? And what's your theory behind it? But until next time, for our believers, keep believing. For our skeptics, keep us grounded. I'm Kathy, and we'll see you next time.
Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.